The interview with Mrs. David Labowitz, side two.
You were talking about diagnosis at the hospital for these handicapped children. Had there ever been any section of the hospital interested in cerebral palsy as a disease, or is this the beginning of recognition?
To my knowledge, there was nothing for the cerebral palsy as such.
When you became active, had you any idea how many of the population were affected? How did you find these children and young adults in the community?
I don't think that there was actually a census of this particular type of brain damage. When we started a nursery school at the Bedford School, under the auspices of Easter Seal, we advertised in the newspapers for this type of child. For the most part, they were hidden away. Parents were loath to admit that they had this type of child because he isn't pretty to look at. It is not a disease. It is not inherited. We know now that it is caused by several things. The Rh blood factor plays a big part. German measles plays a big part. We now have developed a serum preventive for German measles. Unfortunately, the yearly census of cerebral palsy children born in the United States stands pretty steadily at 500,000. After setting up the clinic at Children's Hospital, we started with our first daycare center, which was in reality a babysitting proposition because these children had never been out of their homes.
Where was it set up?
Third Presbyterian Church.
Volunteers started out babysitting?
Well, sometimes there were three, sometimes four, and sometimes only me.
And about how many children were you handling? Was it on a daily basis?
No, it wasn't on a daily basis. I would say that we had five or six children. After we realized that this was one way of getting these children out of their homes, we set up other daycare centers through the city.
Was this financed by your telephone money, or were you receiving?
And United Fund.
By this time, were you an organization unto yourself?
Yes.
No longer connected with any other organization.
United Cerebral Palsy. We're an affiliate of United Cerebral Palsy.
Do you have any idea about what year this was?
Yes, it was early 1950.
Most of the children then were those that you had advertised for?
In the nursery school. But it grew. And we were getting all types of children, age groups.
During this time, had anybody decided among the knowledgeable people that these children could do more than, or could accept more than just a babysitting life, that there was more to work with?
It took us several years. And this could be heresy. It took us several years to persuade the medical profession that these children did not need, that all of these children did not need to be put into institutions or to be hidden away. Today we have fabulous rapport with the medical profession, nurses. Social workers, and almost anybody in the health field. United Cerebral Palsy today is one of the outstanding health agencies in the country. Today we have a very active program with early prevention and early care. We call it our baby program. We're getting federal and state funds to further this project. We also have a very active program for the young adult cerebral palsy. We found that they could leave their homes and live alone or in groups, strictly on their own, regardless of how handicapped. If we have done nothing more, we have made it possible for the cerebral palsy young adult to walk the streets with his head held high, oblivious to the stares of an unknowing populace.
May I ask you what your title was in Cerebral Palsy?
I served as president twice. And I'm a perennial additional member of the executive board.
You mentioned something about the young adult afflicted child, and you're working with them, which nobody had done up until that time.
They were the most severely handicapped, and they had never been out of their homes. And I gathered together a group of about 10 without actually knowing what type of program we could follow. My main purpose was to get them out of their homes. We met in our downtown headquarters, which is in the house building. And the first day we met, the mother of one of the boys was reluctant to leave her son. We persuaded her to take a walk. We met in the morning, and about noon, this mother came back and said she had always wanted to go into the city county building, but she never had the opportunity until that day. And it was an exciting experience for her because she had been so confined to the home of this boy. From our downtown headquarters, we went to the East Liberty Presbyterian Church. The young people were brought in by our buses. They were the most severely handicapped because most of them were in wheelchairs with no speech and no manual dexterity.
Had these been diagnosed then?
Oh, yes.
So they...
We just played games in the morning. And very often we cooked lunch because the church had kitchen facilities. After lunch, we took a walk around the church, wheelchairs and all, and then we played bingo until the buses came to pick them up.
These children had not received any type of formal education. Nobody knew whether they could read or they'd do anything for themselves.
Could you tell immediately that the children responded very positively to being out of the home?
Oh, yes. They couldn't wait to come in.
So it was rewarding from the very start?
From the very beginning.
You had a big public relations job in the community to explain the fact that these children were handicapped but in no way mentally retarded, which was the general feeling of that day, was it not?
Unfortunately, pretty close to 75% of them are retarded. However, we have had geniuses, and we've had many of them respond to the proper approach to certain types of education. And even the slow learners have improved. Today, it is a very important part of our program. They have their own official set up with the president's official and board, executive boards, etc. They print their own newspaper. one very severely handicapped young man is on our board. They go to our state and national conventions. And we've gotten to the point where we don't even see their physical handicaps.
But I suppose it is your ever hope that as the measles is diminishing and some of the other causes of cerebral palsy, that eventually there will be fewer and fewer children less handicapped.
This is where the percentage, a certain percentage of the money we get from foundations, etc., goes to further our research program.
You were talking about the multiple problems that you have with the children needing various types of care, dental, hearing, vision.
As a general rule, the cerebral palsy child has multiple handicaps. Eye problems, visual problems, hearing problems. In my opinion, one of the worst problems that the child, the cerebral palsy child, has is our dental problems. We now have turned our attention to dental hygiene. As a matter of fact, our new president is a dentist.
What is his name?
Dr. George Benz, B-E-N-T-Z.
Do you see that the children and young adults get the proper medical attention, or do you bring this to the attention of the parents who in turn take care of it?
The parents, as a result of being exposed to the organization and its interests and its directions, are now very conscious of medical care that might be needed. We have no problems now in sending them to the proper facilities for health care.
You mentioned that there is a tremendous research program going on for preventative measures early in young girls' lives who are eventually the childbearers of the population.
This is a program we are hoping to promote that would be comparable to the polio program of early prevention.
And the funds you raise are funneled into this from all over the country?
A percentage of the funds that we raise and that we get from United Way go to our research department at headquarters in New York.
You mentioned when we asked you for a date that you would get from your folio a record of the minutes of the first meeting of your organization. And at that time you were told us you were compiling a book.
A history of United Cerebral Palsy, per se. when it started and how we progressed.
Was Pittsburgh one of the first chapters in this national organization?
No, I think Chicago and Philadelphia and then Pittsburgh. We went to our first telethon in Philadelphia because we had planned one here.
And this chapter, this affiliate here, was started in 1951?
As United Cerebral Palsy, yes.
Okay.
You mentioned that you are, have been active at the Home for Crippled Children. Would you please tell us how you became interested in it? Did it derive its activity from your cerebral palsy children?
Yes, it did. Because when we first started the whole program, we really didn't know in which direction to go. And we got great help and assistance from the people at the Home for Crippled Children. And we took some of our children there. As day pupils, and they were a great help to us. So my relationship with the Home for Crippled Children goes back many years. And since our programs have changed at United Cerebral Palsy, where it has become of necessity highly professionalized, and there isn't really any very much active work that can be done by volunteers, except in administrative positions, I am now associated with the Home for Crippled Children, working with a class of children with varying handicaps. Not physical particularly, although we do have a couple of spina bifidas. But I am teaching the three R's.
Reading, writing, and arithmetic. How often do you do that?
I just go once a week, but all day.
Having talked with you a little bit before this interview, you mentioned that you had a lot of freedom all of one whole day, Thursday. We assume that in addition to your volunteer activities, you are doing some things that you enjoy doing, and I wonder if you'd mention them. Probably hobbies.
Well, I play bridge twice a week. I'm taking a class at Chatham in comparative religion under Rabbi Kaplan. And I'm a member of Blanche Wasser's painting class at Annapolis House. And I might add that any opportunity I ever get to talk about my part in the work with cerebral palsy children, I give due credit to the Council of Jewish Women, locally and wherever I'm asked to speak.
And you are still active in the Council of Jewish Women. But you do go up to Annapolis House for your painting. Do you do painting here at home?
No, just up there. But it is fabulous.
Enjoying it thoroughly.
I would like every day to be Friday. I go on Fridays.
Have you ever thought of taking some classes in arts and crafts?
I don't have time.
Isn't that wonderful? Mm-hmm. Am I correct in understanding that Mr. Lavalitz has passed away?
Yes. Yes, I've been a widow for 10 years.
And every day is full.
How long have you lived in this apartment?
3 years.
Thank you.
you mentioned your course in comparative religion at Chatham College under Rabbi Kaplan. You are enjoying it and find it quite fascinating. Could you tell us a little bit about why you're taking it or what interested you in signing up for it?
Well, I'm interested in him.
Rabbi Kaplan.
Yes. He was my guest for dinner one night, and I had been given a triangular piece of silver by a very dear and famous man who lived in Israel, Dr. Bernard Zondek, who was the father of the pregnancy test. He had given me this for a present, and it was years and years and years old, hundreds of years old, and I never knew what it really meant. And Rabbi Kaplan was here for dinner, and I showed it to him, and I asked him what it was. And he said, it had Hebrew lettering on it. And he said that it was an amulet. It was either worn, or it was used as a mezuzah.
With the inscriptions on it.
Mm-hmm. But his knowledge is so widespread, and of course that makes this a very interesting course. My interest in Israel and the state of Israel started with the formation of the state, and my husband and I made our first trip there in 1950 because we were both curious more than anything else. And in those days, you had to have a ration card for food. We sent care packages over so that nobody would have to feed us, you know, friends. And so you can imagine my excitement at the development over a period of I'm about to take my ninth trip.
We're planning to go again shortly.
In seeing the development and seeing what these people are doing, there is, I don't think there's a civilization that we know of that can compare to these people, what they've done in so short a time. They just celebrated their 28th birthday. Now, this isn't even to be counted in the years of civilization as we've known of various countries. Unheard of.
You are in a position to say
under the most horrible, horrendous conditions. Just unbelievable. And when you're there, you don't hear them. I was there, we were there, husband was living then, we were there in 1957, right after the Sinai campaign. I was there in 67, right after the Six-Day War. The 73 war was over in June, and I was there in July.
Came right in after the war. Have you seen such tremendous changes each time you go?
Unbelievable. The university had not been built when we were there at one point. And we were leaving Jerusalem with Dr. Zondek, going someplace else. And he pointed out, over there, he said, will be the new Hebrew University, because Hebrew University was on Mount Scopus, but we weren't allowed to go to see it. Nor in the hospital.
This was what year?
I think it was 54. It was either 54 or 56. We went every 2 years, every year and a half, which I've continued.
Is this because of your love of Israel, or do you have family there?
I have no one there. No one. Dr. Zondek's gone. I just can't tell you. I went over one time with a group of people from Florida, from Miami, was a bond mission, and it had been gotten up suddenly. And one of my close friends from Miami called me, and she said, "We're going to Israel." She called me on a Thursday. "We're leaving for Israel on Sunday. Can you meet us in New York?" And I said, "I could have met you Wednesday." This was after the 67 war. And it was